I indicated last week that, you know, what I wanted to discuss was not so much Mordechai or Esther, who rightly get a very significant amount of our attention, but the Jewish people. Who were the Jews of Persia? What was their state of affairs, spiritually and otherwise? We understand very well and very clearly that they faced an existential crisis in the literal sense of the term. But what I'd like to try to lay out tonight is the thesis that this existential crisis was actually the product of a spiritual crisis. That the Jews of Persia were in, when the Megillah began in the days of Ahasuerus, and tragically, to an extent, even at the conclusion of the Megillah, years later, even with the ascent of Mordechai, the Jews of Persia found themselves in a spiritual crisis. And I'd like to try to document this, support this thesis with evidence, not only from the Megillah, but from the commentary that we have from Chazal and later sources. And then try to spend the last 10 to 15 minutes reflecting on what this means for us. The Megillah is a singularly cherished text. The Gemara discusses there are certain halachic ramifications of that, that you could have multiple people reading the Megillah at once because of what the Gemara refers to as the chavivos of Mikra Megillah. It's a beloved and cherished text, but it's also a singularly relevant text. We're told, and the Rambam rules this way, that in the future, much of Tanakh as we know it will be null and void. Megillas Esther will remain along with only the Chamisha Chomshe Torah, Bereishis Shmos Vayikra Bamidbar Dvarim, and then we'll have Megillas Esther. So it is a singularly important and relevant text. V'zichram le'yasuf mizaram. And I'd like to try to explore why that is the case and why that should be the case in the context of the particular history of the Jews of Persia. I titled the shir, The Sleeping Jews of Persia. That isn't meant only to connote that they were in some kind of, you know, a slumber, a narcoleptic slumber, but that spiritually the Jewish people, as we will see in a core text from the Gemara Masechta Megillah, are described as being asleep. And I think that this metaphor is a profound one, and very carefully chosen. There are different ways of indicating spiritual obsolescence, mediocrity. The notion of sleeping, I think, will be very, very critical here. I'll try to develop that point as we go. So let me begin where none other than Rabbi Lazar began. It was really fascinating about part of the discussion that we find in Chazal regarding Megillas Esther is that there are a whole series of introductions that various illustrious sages gave to reading the Megillah, connoting this sense of the importance that they placed on it, that they would try to introduce it in a systematic way. So we have here in the first source, Moshe Rasha Zahaman al Amdal Elu Yisrael. The Jews are described as an Amdal. Dal literally means poor, usually in the financial sense of the term. V'im Dal Hu V'ein Yadoma Seges. We have the Korbanos, Korbanolo V'yored. Shehim Dolin Min HaMitzvos. The Jews were impoverished, not in the material sense. I think that's also very important, as we'll see, but spiritually impoverished. Rabbi Lazar pasach lapischa laparshas ameacha. And indeed, Rabbi Lazar would begin, when Rabbi Lazar would, you know, he wouldn't do it over Zoom, I presume, but when he would introduce, as I am, the Megillah, Clearly in a more fluid and compelling manner, no doubt. But he would begin with this point. Ba'atzaltayim imach ha-mikareo v'shiflos yadayim yidlof habayis, which literally means that through laziness, the ceiling will grow weak, and through weakness of hand, the house shall flood. In other words, the ceiling, the roof is not properly secured, there's going to be a rain, and there's going to be a very serious problem. So we have here this sense of negligence, of dereliction, right? And that's where Reb Elazar started. So the Jews in a state of dereliction vis-a-vis Torah and Mitzvos. Bishlil Atzlu Shahaya Lahem Yisrael Shalo Asku BaTorah, and in particular with respect to study of Torah, which we're all doing right now in a very serious way, where the Jewish people were not doing in Persia, Nasa Sono Shel Kadosh Baruch Hu Mach Ve'ein Mach El Ani. God was unable to defend them against Haman. So there's this idea that the Jewish people had turned their backs on intensive Torah study, and as a result became vulnerable to everything that took place. In other words, as we said, the existential crisis follows the spiritual crisis, not the other way around. The existential crisis follows the spiritual crisis. And the spiritual crisis has to do with abandonment of rigorous study of Torah. And this is a critical, critical, critical point. In a Chazal, we find that the Purim celebration, there's a notion of Kimu V'Kiblu, that it's a day of Kabbalah Satorah. The Jewish people accepted the Torah anew. There's a positive dimension to that, right? The idea of a new Kabbalah Satorah, but let's be very honest and let's be very direct. That means that there was also something significantly deficient and missing. And that's exactly what this Gemara is trying to point us towards. That they needed to accept the Torah again. It was as if their acceptance of the Torah had lapsed, had gone into remission. Okay. That's a critical element of the very beginning of the Megillah. That's where Reb Elazar would begin. Not with Haman, not with Achashverosh. It's easy to externalize our problems. This is about internalizing our problems, about looking in the mirror. Shalu Talmida Ves Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, even an earlier authority. Why was it the case that the Jews of that generation faced an existential crisis? Amar Lahem, so Rabbi Shimon Yochai said to his students, tell me what you think, which is an interesting pedagogical technique. I like that. Maybe we'll have a time to discuss that in the future. Amar Lahem Imru Atem, Amrulo, they said to him, Mipnei shenehenu misudaso shel oso rasha. Okay, and they said, we think it's because the Jews benefited from the party of Achashverosh. Now here, even though I acknowledge that if you look in the Marsha and some of the other classical authorities, they do seem to take the view that, you know, part of the problem was, you know, an issue of kashrus and that they weren't being careful, you know, at this party. I take it as much more than that. First of all, there were arguably worse things going on at the party, number one. And number two, the issue was them participating altogether. You don't go to a party like the one Achashverosh was throwing. And that is reflective of a very, 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 very deep and pervasive assimilation. Okay? Now, interestingly, Rabbi Shimon Yochai responded to his students, and he said, well, look, if that were really the case, so then only the Jews of Shushan should have been, right, subject to the existential crisis. Because that, you know, after party, you know, Achar HaDvarim Ha'ila, Asah HaMelech, you know, Mishteh L'Cholsa Rava Vadav, right, that there was a 7, you know, day party in Shushan HaBira. So, you know, why was it the case that all 127 provinces were implicated in the threat of Haman? Okay. So the Talmidim said, okay, that's why you're our Rebbe. You know better than us. Why don't you say, you know, what the problem was? And he said something very interesting. And I'm not sure that they're really disagreeing. Rabbi Shimon Yochai responded, it's because before the Persians had destroyed the Babylonians in the days of Belshazzar, the Jews had uniformly, with the sole exceptions of Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, had capitulated and to our national disgrace had bowed to the idol that had been erected by Nebuchadnezzar. So what is Rabbi Shimon Yochai saying? What he's saying is that there was a sense that the Jews had compromised in critical areas, of course, under pressure. And what his Talmidim are pointing to is maybe the symptom of that, that what started with, you know, okay, under immense pressure, they cracked and, you know, bowed down to this tzelem, as opposed to, you know, choosing martyrdom, or Hanani, Mishael, and Azariah were obviously miraculously saved. But what started out with under duress became a policy of becoming accommodationists, and shortly thereafter assimilationists, okay? Because once you start down that path, the path of rationalization, accommodation, what inevitably follows is assimilation. And that's exactly where we can begin in terms of the text. The Megillah tells us, Ish Yehudi hayav Shushan habira, ushmo Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kishi Shimini asher hagla Yerushalayim, im hagla asher hagla saim, Yechoniah melech Yehuda asher hagla, Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel. It's interesting, apropos Rabbi Shimon Yochai's point, that Nebuchadnezzar is mentioned. But what interests me the most, and the Esther Rabbah that you have here in the third source certainly amplifies the point, is that a singular Jew is described in Shushan, but also a single Jew is described in Shushan. Which is to say that there's no doubt that Mordechai was unique and uniquely deserving of being called an Ish Yehudi, right? The Esther Rabbah says he was compared to Moshe Rabbeinu, Shakal Bedoro Kimoshe Bedoro, Ma Moshe Amar Beperetz, Af Mordechai Amar Beperetz, Ma Moshe Limei Torah, Af Mordechai Kane. It's true he was a singular Jew, but it's also true, and arguably more important, that he was a single Jew. You're talking about thousands and hundreds of thousands, ultimately, of Jews, right, throughout the Persian Empire, and many, 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 many Jews, as we know from the Megillah, who are in Shushan, okay, leaving aside the point for now of Shushan and Shushan Abira, but, okay, that were in Shushan, and the Megillah is very clear that in terms of identifiable, let's call it proud, you know, extroverted Jews who did not seek to be, you know, Jews in the home and Persians, you know, in the public square, to paraphrase the Mendelssohnian expression, okay, there was one, okay, you could count them, you don't even need one hand, okay? So that's I think, a critical point, and it's of a piece with what we're suggesting, that the spiritual crisis precedes the existential crisis, and what had started with, under duress, a certain degree of accommodation to Nebuchadnezzar quickly became, right, a mass assimilation. When Haman proposes the annihilation of Jewish people to Achashverosh, the Megillah records the following. Yeshno am echad mefuzar meforad bein ha'amim. The Gemara Megillah, from where I extracted the title of this year, Yeshno am echad amarava leka diyadalash nabisha kahaman. Nobody spoke lashon hara like Haman, which is not a compliment. Okay, so amarlei tanichlinhu. So Haman says to Achashverosh, let's annihilate them. Let's have a final solution to this problem. Amarlei. So Achashverosh says, Mistafina melohai dilo li'abid bi ki da'avid bikamoi. I'm very concerned, Achashverosh says, that what will happen to me and what will happen to those who came before me, namely the Babylonians. Remember, Daniel had literally read the handwriting on the wall, as the proverb goes, that they would be destroyed for, you know, their destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It's a, so Achashverosh says, you know, one doesn't mess with these people. So Amarle, Yeshno, meaning Yashnu min hamitzvos. They are asleep. They are asleep when it comes to mitzvos. Haman, Leisman diyada, Lishna Bishak, and Haman, nobody could speak as persuasively as he had. When he told Achashverosh that they're, right, asleep, what he was telling them, he was telling Achashverosh, is you don't have anything to worry about, because their, you know, sam hachayim, as it were, their elixir of life, right, is not available to them. They've abandoned their strong position, their fortified position, which is, you know, of mitzvos. And what I'd like to try to come back to in just a few moments is the idea that being asleep is certainly a condemnation and an indictment of the Jews of the Persian Empire and their assimilationism. Nanu misudaso shaloso rasha, right? Dal min hamitzvos shalo asku b'Torah. But it also reflects a certain potential, because he or she who is sleeping can be roused by very definition. So as an image and as a metaphor, it's a very, very important one, because it connotes a certain latent possibility and potential, but it has to be stimulated and has to be catalyzed. And that, I think, is a very, very important frame through which we should understand the events of the Megillah. In particular, when the Jews are sentenced to mass annihilation, the Megillah tells us that Mordechai sprung into action. We know that Mordechai violated the diktats of the Persian court. He came into the palace courtyard, you know, in ash and sackcloth. Vatischalchal ha-malkah me'od, and Esther was, you know, deeply distressed at this breach of protocol. But Mordechai had to give her a permission structure, right? Because if Mordechai's message to her is that she has to breach protocol and she has to go to the king unannounced, he had to show her that it could be done. And so he breached the protocol and gave her a permission structure for so doing. Uvechein avo el hamelech asher lo chadas, as she says. But what about the Jews? And what are the Jews doing? And what we see is total passivity. Evel gadol ayudim, v'tzom uvechiyum mispeid, sak v'efer yutzal arabim. The Jews are in mourning, they're crying, right? They're already being maspid themselves, they're delivering their own eulogies, this and that, but there's no plan. There's no action. A state of paralysis. Again, for me, the framework, yashnu min hamitzvos. Effectively, they're asleep. Small wonder, then, that Esther, after being shaken by Mordechai, v'tischalchal malkah me'od, and after Mordechai breaches protocol, so that she in turn will breach the protocol, avol ha-melech asher lo chadas, Esther calls for the activation of the Jewish community. Lech kenosas kol ha-yehudim, which has many layers of meaning, all of which are important. It is certainly about unity and cohesion to counteract the Haman's charge of mifuzar mifurad, the fractiousness of the Jewish people, something which resonates very strongly with things that we're witnessing very painfully over these last days and weeks, divisions in the Jewish people. But it also speaks to a degree of activation. Kenosis kol ha-yudim, you're the Jewish people together, get them focused, right? And I'm going to focus, and we're going to take these 72 hours, and then the plan will begin to unfold. I mean, this idea of activation, which I think is so critical and so vital, is a direct response to what we described of Yeshno Amechad, of Yashnu Min HaMitzvos. That's a people that have great power and potential, but that's fallen asleep. Or to go back to the image from the Gemara that we started with, Ba'atzaltayim Yimach HaMekarev Shiflus Yadayim Yidlof Habayis, the sense of atzlus, of laziness, of corpulence, of laxity that had come to characterize the Jewish people, the loss of focus. Mordechai stands out, Ish Yudi Hayam B'Shushan Abira, but only one, and it's not enough. And so Esther's activation of the Jewish people, what I call the rousing, the arousal of the Jewish people from the state of slumber, it's a really critical moment. And of course, it would pay massive dividends by the time that you get to the ninth chapter, where the Jewish people really, you know, have to be active for themselves. They can no longer afford to be asleep in any sense of the term. Nikalu hayudim ba'areihem, b'chom dinos ha-melech ha-chashverosh, right? And the Megillah describes how the Jews have to be omeid b'nafsham, we have to stand up for ourselves. And part of that is certainly outward facing in terms of dealing with our enemies, but part of it is inward facing as well. I mean, the idea of being activated, right? Parents know, dealing with, right, here so often, a parent will say of a child, wish they could be interested in something, right? It doesn't seem like there's anything that's motivating them right now. You know, forget about what the cause is, but just, you know, show some signs of life here. And that was exactly the problem. The Jews had lost that sense. And what had taken hold of them was, again, loss of identity and assimilation, falling by inertia into the mass culture, the decadent culture of the Persian Empire. Esther succeeds, after being prodded by Mordechai, in rousing the Jewish people from this slumber, Lech Kenosis Kol Hayudim, so that by the time we get to chapter 8, we have a very different portrayal of the Jewish people. The Megillah tells us famously, Layudim Haysa Ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kar. The plain meaning, of course, is that the Jewish people, you know, experienced, you know, was, you know, great light, joy, etc. But the Gemara understood that this had a far, far deeper and more significant, you know, meaning. La'yudim haysa ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikara merv Yehuda, ora zo Torah, where we started this evening. The first and foremost, they recommitted themselves to Torah, the Torah study, more than in just a moment. V'cheinu omer kinyar mitzvah v'torah, or simcha zayom tov, to observance of their holidays. V'cheinu omer v'samachta v'chagecha, sason zomila, v'cheinu omer sason ochelim rasecha, v'ikar elu tefillin. And there's all of these mitzvos, brismila, tefillin, yantif, limudat Torah, had fallen into senescence. And the Jews needed to be roused to resume the basic patterns of Jewish life. I mean, that's exactly the process that was unfolding as the existential crisis was playing itself out, the spiritual crisis was playing itself out exactly at the same time. Now, again, based on the psukim that we have in chapter 9, which again, you know, seem like, you know, it's about the Jewish people defending themselves and, you know, becoming more active in the physical or material sense, right, we have is an equally, if not more significant, in my view, spiritual activation. V'kibel hayudim eis asher echelu lasos v'eis asher kasav Mordechai aleihem kimu v'kiblu hayudim, what I alluded to before, you know, in the Gemara. Amarav ha'afal pichein hadar kiblu abimei achashverosh kimu v'kiblu hayudim kimu masha kiblu kvar. That is to say, that the Jewish people had a sufficient spiritual renewal so as to be characterized by Chazal as a new Kabbalah Satorah. And one that, in a certain measure, surpassed even that which happened in the days of Moshe, which is a very fascinating idea in its own right. So what we have is a completely new perspective. A nation that had fallen into a state of deep, deep spiritual slumber, Yeshno Am Echad, Yashno Min HaMitzvos, Nenu Misudasu Shel Osa Rasha, with frightening speed. In other words, from the days of Nebuchadnezzar to the days of Achashverosh, we're talking about less than a century has passed. And in that time, the Jews have gone from being, you know, prepared to, you know, make compromises, you know, at the edge of the knife or the sword, right, or the furnace in the case of Nebuchadnezzar, to being, you know, basically completely assimilated Bris Milah, Yantiv, Tefillin, Limud HaTorah, etc. A new Kabbalah Satorah was absolutely necessary in this generation. And as this existential crisis is playing itself out, the spiritual crisis, you know, is also in parallel, on the one hand exploited by Haman, and then you know through the great efforts of Mordechai, and subsequently those of Esther, this spiritual crisis being reversed, Layhudim Ha'isa Ora V'Simcha. Visason Vikar. Okay? And so what we're doing is obviously challenging the conventional wisdom. You know, there's a very important, you know, line of thought that, you know, Hanukkah is all about a spiritual persecution of the Jews, and, you know, Purim is about the physical persecution of the Jews, and there were great halachists who took that point of view. I consider that to be at odds with Chazal's perception. Chazal's perception was that Purim was about both. It was about an existential crisis that was secondary to a spiritual crisis. Now, it would be nice if I ended tonight by saying, and the good news is, Layhudi Maisaur V'simcha V'sasun Vikar, Torah, Yantif, Bris Milah, Tefillin, Kimu V'Kiblu, Hadar Kiblu B'Meach HaShverosh, a new Kabbalah HaTorah, the riding off into the sunset. I'd like to be able to tell you that, but that's not what the evidence suggests. And, as noted, if the metaphor of a sleeping nation, on the one hand, conveys potential for arousal, for awakening, which is exactly what happens, we also know that that itself is reversible. Because those who are awake can fall asleep again. And in fact, if you look very carefully at the end of Perek Tes of the Megillah, literally the very end of the story, because the 10th chapter is essentially a postscript, Ahasuerus taxed the people. Mordechai was the second, as we know, taking over for Haman. You know, and the rest of the story is written, you know, in the books of the kings of Persia. So chapter 9 is really the end of the Megillah in substance. And we have a very disconcerting end. And one that I believe is meant to be disconcerting and meant to be unsettling for what it conveys. V'atichtov Esther ha-malkah bas Avichayil, u'mordechai ha-yudiyes kol tokef. V'kayim esigeres ha-purim azos ha-shenis. Something about the second time. We'll see the Ibn Ezra in a moment. V'yishlach svarim al-kol yudim al-shev v'yashrim me'abdin ha-malchus ha-chashverosh divrei shalom. They wrote in peace, but v'emes, they wrote directly in a forthright manner. V'kayim esyimei ha-purim ho'ela bizmanehem. That the Jews must observe these days of Purim, Kashri Kiyam, Le Morchode, Yudiv, Esther, Malka, as Mordechai and Esther had established. Kashri Kimol, Navsham, Velzran, Divrei, Atzomos, Vizakasam. Says the Ibn Ezra, you have the 13th source. Hatam, Shishamar, Yisrael, Dasa, Purim, Shanim, Yiduos. The Jews observed Purim for a discrete, finite period of time. V'acharkach, but subsequently, they abandoned it. It too fell by the wayside. Al Kain, hence, Hutzrach Mordechai, Mordechai was obliged, Shabikesh Malcha, Sheyefachadum Mimena. He asked Queen Esther, who the Jews were afraid of because she was the queen, that she should write to the Jews, Mordechai tried himself. You know what? He was just a rabbi. Okay, they put him in a position of power, but people said, you know, he's the rabbi, you don't have to listen to him. But she's the queen. You have to listen to her. Rizet Thomas called Tokef. That's why it says the Ibn Ezra, with force and authority, it was the first time Esther wrote, but there was a second time Mordechai had appealed to the Jews to keep these days. And the Ibn Ezra, Kedarko, as is his wont, says, I can bring a witness, a character witness to my Perush, to my interpretation, which is the Pasuk says, U'mamar Esther kiyam divrei Apurim. It was only because Esther, writing with royal authority, that is to say, with a threat, it is only because she essentially threatened them that she was able to rehabilitate Purim. Lulei ma'amara kvar hayu nishgachim. None of it would have mattered. Like they fell asleep the first time, they fell asleep a second time. And as the only thing that really roused them from their slumber the first time was the idea of an existential threat, Mordechai said, the only way I could get through to these people is through fear, through pachad, scare them. The Gemara tells us that more than all of the drashos of all of the Nevi'im, the 48 Nevi'im and the 7 Nevi'os that led the Jewish people and the aggregated drashos every rabbi ever gave in his lifetime combined, nothing did more to move the Jewish people than when Achashverosh handed the tabas to Haman, handed him the ring and gave him the power. That was more significant than every sermon that was ever given combined. So what are we being told? That which is achieved through arousal by fear at the sword's edge is critical, it's important, it's an opportunity. But inherently, it's deficient. Because what happens? As that memory recedes, as the threat wanes, the urgency does as well, and the spiritual dereliction reemerges. And that is actually where the Megillah ends. Yeah, Esther was able to scare the people into the importance of Umamar Esther Kiyam Estivrei HaPurim Azos. She scared them into it.
How did she scare them, Rabbi?
She was the queen. She was the queen. She can do whatever she wants, Sam.
I know, but what kind of threat would she say?
Doesn't matter. The queen can do whatever she wants. Whatever she wants. This is not, you know, you're living in American democracy. She doesn't need, she can do whatever she wants. You know, it's not like, she's going to need some kind of a constitutional amendment, you know, and, you know, we're going to appeal to the Supreme Court. That doesn't work that way. It's a power. And this is, I think, the most important message. And when the Rambam talks about the idea that Megillas Esther is going to be permanent, to always be with us, I think there are many layers of meaning to that. But I think one of the critical layers of meaning is to the extent that the spiritual rejuvenation, Yehudim Haisa'ora V'Simcha V'Sason V'Kar, was driven by an existential threat, the spiritual rehabilitation was deficient. Because the removal of that threat led us back to the same place. And all of the deliverance and all that made Purim such a remarkable and worthwhile experience to recall throughout the generations, over time they left that also. And so as much as it's a text of deliverance, the Megillah is also a warning. That unless spirituality is driven by a sense of deep identification, of deep investment, and if indeed our well-being is tied to that, which it is, so then the intensity with which we need to approach our spiritual selves, spiritual care, our spiritual health, you know, can't be overstated. If we're going to rely, Vatischalchal HaMalkan Ma'od, on getting Mordechai to do something dramatic, a breach of protocol, to get Esther to breach the protocol, to activate the Jews, Kenosis Kol HaYudim, we might be able to, by the skin of our teeth and by the grace of God, emerge from a particular crisis, never solve the problem. We'll be back asleep in a few hours, metaphorically speaking. Sustainable spirituality requires not the edge of the abyss, not the fiery furnace, not the point of a sword, but it requires deep, deep, deep commitment, study, and investment. It's where we started. When the Jews ceased to engage seriously in Torah study, their spirituality waned. Their spirituality waned. They fell asleep. They were only aroused by the threat of destruction. When the threat of destruction was removed, they fell asleep again. And Esther had to essentially threaten them into keeping the days of Purim. Ma'amar Esther Kiyam is Divrei HaPurim Azos V'nichtav Ba'Sefer, and that's where we have it today. And so I think for us, the message is unequivocal. Batzaltayim imacha mekarev v'shiflus yadayim yidlof habayis. This is what Rebbe Lazar started with. If you want to understand the importance and the enduring legacy of Mikra Megillah, you have to understand the importance of spiritual activation for its own sake, not driven by a Haman or by fear, but by deep identification and constant effort, renewal of involvement in Torah. Otherwise, what will inevitably happen is the need to be triggered by some kind of external threat, the removal of which will relaunch the cycle. Anybody who's learned Sefer Shoftim knows about this very, very, very well. The cycle that repeats time and time again. It's exactly the story of Megillas Esther. The last 5 minutes, I just wanted to conclude by noting what is a statistical, it's obvious on the one hand, but sometimes I think the problem is so large. And overwhelming that it becomes difficult for us to talk about. More than anything else, I think it's rooted in a lack of historical consciousness. We are not the first generation of Jews. We are not the first generation of Jews living in a diaspora. The ravages and power of assimilation are real, and they are at the heart of the story of Megillas Esther. The Jewish experience in America has been really true to each and every word of Dickens, the best of times, the worst of times, at the same time. unprecedented opportunity. Unprecedented achievement. Staggering attrition. Overwhelming loss. Anybody with an iota of a sense of fraternity or sorority watches in pain as an identity so tenaciously preserved for so long is ameliorated, diluted, and in some cases, abandoned entirely. The process that's playing out before our eyes, and I'm certainly not a prophet, so I have no idea what the trajectory, what the pace will be. We just came off of the National Day of Hate. But we all have experienced over the course of the last number of years. We don't need the ADL to tell us exactly what the numbers are. That the spiritual crisis of American Jewry is now, in its incipient phases, being followed by, predictably, an existential crisis, where the place of the Jew in America, once assured, once secure, is now fundamentally in question. The processes are complex. We have it at the extremes of our polarized political system. The one thing that the far left and the far right agree about is that the Jews are really the problem here in different ways. And this follows a very clear pattern. It's an existential crisis. It follows a spiritual crisis. Now, fortunately, things in America are at present, thank God, not what the Jews of Shushan faced by the time that Haman got to Tabas. But history is a way of moving, and sometimes moving much more quickly than is comfortable for us. And we would do well not to disregard the lessons of Megillas Esther in this respect. We very, 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 very much would like for the arousal of the Jewish people, of all of the Jewish people, a sense of fraternity, mutual responsibility for our spiritual well-being, to awaken and not at the edge of the knife. But short of that, what the Megillah teaches us is that arousal will happen one way or the other. Revach v'atzala yamod la'yudim mimakom acher v'atu v'esavich tovedu. That the pattern will be destined to repeat itself if we can't manage to rouse ourselves without the taba'as, the proverbial ring, needing to be transferred. And I think that is a sacred obligation for all of us, to be cognizant of where we are. It's always hard to perceive one's moment in history, but I think we need to look at it for what it is. Nenu misudaso shalosa rasha. Bishiflos yadayim yidlof habayis. Atzlus yimacha mekare. A spiritual resurgence is needed, and needed, with a certain kind of intensity to forestall processes that have played themselves out many times before in Jewish history. And I think this is an enduring lesson of Megillas Esther that I think we can and must be cognizant of in our generation, and must do what we can. Leich kenosis kol ha-yehudim, to try to activate, spiritually speaking, the Jewish people, so that that activation need not come from what is always, as we described, a suboptimal source, not just because of how traumatic it is to have to deal with threats and anti-Semitism, but because when that's the source of one's spiritual rejuvenation, the rejuvenation itself is inherently vulnerable to lapses as soon as the crisis has passed. We have an opportunity. None of us can know how long the window is open, but we have an opportunity to try to achieve a degree of spiritual arousal and rejuvenation without having to rely on the clear trajectory of those who are amongst the spiritual heirs of the Ish Tsar Ve'oyev Haman Hara Hazeh. Let us not need that, you know, for our spiritual rehabilitation. And this Purim, may we merit a Kimu V'Kiblu, a new Kabbalah Satorah, which, having learned and internalized the lessons of Megillas Esther, doesn't wait for anti-Semitism to get that much worse before revisiting our identities, Ora Zotora, Simcha Zoyantif, Sason Zomila, Vikar Elu Tfilin, but embracing these things because they are and always will be intrinsically valuable reflections of absolute truth and our connection to Hashem. So I wish everybody a Simchas Purim. It should be a time of great meaning, like I say, spiritual rejuvenation.